जय राध माधव कुंज बिहारी। गोपी जन बल्लब गिरवारे हरि। गोपी जन बल्लब गिरवारे हरि। Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vanacharya Yamuna Tira Vanacharya Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jai Om Vishnupad Padmahamsa Parvraja Katara Sotera Sat Shri Shimini's Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai Nanda Gaura Vaishnavinda Ki Jai Gaura Premananda. All glories to assembled devotees. All glories to assembled devotees. All glories to assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Namo Bishwapadaya Krishna Vastaya Buddhaya Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tinamani. Namaste Sarasvati Gaur Rambishrani Nirvishesha Srimati Vaskita Adisi Tarani. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 21, Text 40, Conversations between Manu and Kardama. Punya Druma Lita Jalai Kujat Punya Mrigad Vijay Sarvartu Palapushpadyam Vanaraji Shrinanvitam Punya Druma Lita Jalai Kujat punya mrigat vijay Sarvartu palapushpadyam Vanaraji shriyanvitam Punyadruma lita jalai Kujat punya mrigat vijay Sarvartu palapushpadyam Vanaraji shriyanvitam Palapushpadyam Jai. Sarvartu palapushpa dyam Banavraji shriyanvitam Sarvartu palapushpadyam Vanaraji Shriyanvita Punya Pious Druma of trees Lata of creepers Jalai with clusters Kujat uttering cries Punya Pious, Mriga, animals, Vijay, with birds, Sarva, in all, Ritu, seasons, Pala, in fruits, Pushpa, in flowers, Adyam, rich, Vanaraji, of groves of trees, Shriya, by the beauty. Anvitam, adorned. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. The shore of the lakes was surrounded by clusters of pious trees and creepers, rich in fruits and flowers of all seasons, that afforded shelter to pious animals and birds, which uttered various cries. It was adorned by the beauty of groves of forest trees. Okay. Report. It is stated here that Bindu Sarovara was surrounded by pious trees and birds, as there are different classes of men in human society, some pious and virtuous, and some impious and sinful. So also among trees and birds, there are the pious and the impious. Trees which do not bear nice fruit or flowers are considered impious. And birds which are very nasty, such as crows, are considered impious. In the land surrounding Bindu Sarovara, there was not a single impious bird or tree. Every tree bore fruits and flowers, and every bird sang the glories of the Lord. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada. Om Gyana Timrandasya Gananjana Salakaya Chaksarun Mitanina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Shtapitam Yoyena Bhutales Swayam Rupa Gadamayam Dadanti Swapadanti Kam Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Dvaita Gadadhar Shivasiddhi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopisha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurange Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sate Devi Pranamame Hare Priye Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Vanchakopatrubhishcha kripasindhubhyebhacha patitano pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. So today's class, we are going to discuss the non-human living entities, as that seems to be the topic here. And it's kind of it's a very interesting topic because we always talk about human beings primarily because we know that our scriptures and devotional service, chanting, all that, is mainly meant for the human species of life because really only the human species are capable of understanding philosophy and being able to understand real spiritual life for that matter. However, that doesn't mean that there isn't a great variety within the other living entities, and they're also of interest to the devotees. First of all, the non-human species greatly outnumber human species. Of the 8,400,000 species, 400,000, which is a small minority, are considered human. I always kind of wonder what 400,000 human species are, but I suppose this is all the, you know, apsaras and kanaras and, you know, all the different, you know, types of demigods and minor demigods and everything that we hear about. In fact, I believe that Prabhupada has also said that sometimes some of the apes and monkeys are even considered in the human species. So, obviously on the lower end. But, there are obviously a number of variety of humans, but far more variety of plants and animals. So in this verse in purport, it's talking about pious and impious living entities. Just as we see that human beings are in the different modes of nature, goodness, passion, ignorance, so are plants and animals. And specifically, all the plants and animals at Bindusarovara were very pious. Talked about the beautiful forest groves and trees and plants that produce flowers and fruit. They are considered to be pious. Of course, why is that? One thing is those fruits and flowers may be offered to Krishna. If a particular living entity has some product that can be offered to Krishna and please Krishna, that obviously shows something about its piety, that it has that ability to give pleasure to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So there's beautiful forest groves, trees and plants, produce flowers and fruits. All the animals are pious. It's mentioned that the birds chant Hare Krishna. I don't have a lot of insight about that, why these particular ones have been to Sarovara do. I mean, we know that it's a holy place, so why not? But it's not the spiritual world, but still, Prabhupada's saying that they chant the Hare Krishna mantra. So they're obviously very pious, great sages there, the birds around Bindusarovara. It doesn't specifically say which animals are pious, but we understand, obviously, cows are considered in the mode of goodness, and they're very pious, and Krishna has great affection for the cows. And then some animals are specifically not pious. And what's the only one that's really mentioned here is crows. So, you know, crows are not held in very high regard, as we can say. In fact, I was looking at some, you know, the purports of the other acharyas, and Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakura also specifically mentions the crows as being impious. Prabhupada calls them nasty, doesn't he? Isn't it the word? Yeah, he says they're a nasty bird. I was thinking about that. They actually are. Crows are very intelligent. You know, a very, very smart bird. And I have nothing against crows particularly, but if you really look at them, what do? They're noisy, they're thieving, they eat the crops, so people, you know, human beings don't particularly like them. Think about the scarecrows, scarecrow. In other words, they're meant to keep the crows away, that particularly, and we see that, I'm from the Midwest, and the crows definitely like to eat the corn and eat the crops in many ways. And they eat other birds' eggs. They're actually not very nice. I saw once a small flock of mockingbirds. Anyone who's from northern Florida knows about mockingbirds and knows that they're not just sweet little songbirds. They're very aggressive, right? You've all seen mockingbirds probably attacking cats and, you know, I saw these mockingbirds driving off a big crow, you know, five times their size because they get into their nests and they eat their eggs. So they had to protect her from the nasty crow. So we know that animals are in different modes. In a this is from a Bhagavatam class 1.2.24. It's actually in the class discussion afterwards. There are questions answering. And Prabhupada said, the lion is in Rajaguna, the cow is in Sattvaguna, and the monkey is in Tamaguna. I think monkeys are kind of in the same class as crows, aren't they? They look cute, but they are just a complete nuisance, aren't they? How many people have had their glasses stolen in Vrindavan like monkeys? I have twice, you know. So, yes, they're very, very much rascals. And anyway, Most animals in the material world are in the mode of ignorance and tamaguna. Bhagavad Gita 14:15 says, when one dies in the mode of ignorance, he takes birth amongst the animal kingdom. So if a human being is in a mode of ignorance, which means what? We know from Bhagavad Gita, it means one is lazy, slothful, so many things, indulging in bad habits, sinful activities. That person will take a birth amongst the animal species. And in Prabhupada's purport to a few verses later, Bhagavad Gita 14:18, he says, the result of developing ignorance is very, very risky. Millions of species of life, birds, beasts, reptiles, trees, etc. And according to development of the mode of ignorance, people are brought down to these abominable conditions. So we may have some sympathy for animals. We may try to help them, and we want them to make some spiritual advancement, but we certainly don't want to be in the animal species of life. That would never be one of our goals. Have you ever talked to people, non-devotees, about reincarnation and stuff, and ever had people say, oh, I think I'd like to be a dog, or I'd like to be this or that, right? You heard people say this, I'm sure. Well, they have no idea. They would not enjoy those births very much because, you know, they're in ignorance. You don't know anything. You're just driven by the modes of nature. And the material world is a very difficult place. It's hard enough for humans. But what's going on the out in the plant kingdom and in the animal world, it's they call it dog eat dog. Well, I mean, it's like it's what's the Sanskrit, jiva jiva sajivanam, one living entity is food for another, right? What's that verse? The general rule goes that when you know that one, Pundarik? Yeah, it's like one, it says something like the general rule is that one living entity is food for another, you know. So That is, it's a difficult life, and that's mode of ignorance, when one is only able to just try to survive. Survival level is not human life. Human life is to have time to devote to spiritual life, to self-realization, to serving Krishna and the spiritual master. Now, it's kind of interesting, though, when we look at plants and animals, there's all these different gradations. Now, I wanted to mention a couple things in this class. First of all, the different gradations of plants and animals, and also the point that a few verses earlier in, I'm going to go into another chapter of the Bhagavatam, but it also talks about how the devotee should not see difference. We should not see difference from one living entity to another. In other words, you know, Pandita Samadarshan, one sees with equal vision. So how is that? How is it we see all as equal? You know, that's the perspective of a devotee, that all living entities are part and parcel of Krishna. They all have the soul within them. And yet we see these different gradations within the Bhagavatam. Well, obviously the gradations are about bodies. It's about the different bodies have different qualities. They're in different modes, even though the soul is equal within every single one of them. So one way that we see this gradation of living entities is by sensory development. Now, there's a very interesting chapter coming up, 329. Well, that'll probably take us about a year to get there. Anyway, later, since this is Kapila's teachings to Devahuti, which we're just on the verge, we're just getting to, right? We're just getting to where Swayambhuva Manu comes to the hermitage of Kardama Muni, Devahuti, and he will get together, and then they will have the son, Kapila. And Kapila, of course, Kardama Muni leaves, and Kapila will then begin teaching philosophy to his mother, Devahuti. So this is many, many chapters, wonderful chapters of philosophy spoken by Kapila. So when we get down out to chapter 29, verses 28 through 30, Kapila talks about the development of animals according to development of their different senses. I found it quite interesting. Starting with text 28, Kapila says, living entities are superior to inanimate objects, O Blessed Mother, and among them, living entities who display life symptoms are better. Animals with developed consciousness are better than them, and better still are those who have developed sense perception. So in his purport, Srila Prabhupada explains how animals demonstrate this different sensory development. They're not specifically named within the verses, but Prabhupada gives some examples of how this is. Prabhupada says the first division is made between dead, stone-like matter, and living organisms. So first you have non-living matter, just, you know, material energy, and material energy which has the presence of the spirit soul, of course, becomes a living organism. So a living organism is sometimes manifested even in stone. Experience shows that hills and mountains grow. This is due to the presence of the soul within that stone. I'm sure I've told this story at least once or twice here, but for me, it was very instructive. This was in 1976, Washington, D.C., Potomac Temple, where Srila Prabhupada came. And it was during an evening darshan. I was there, and the darshan was with the Bhaktivedanta Institute scientists. Sarup Damodar and some of the other scientists were there, and Srila Prabhupada was talking to them, and they were giving him sort of an outline that would later become the Life Comes From Life book. So they were kind of like trying out their ideas on Srila Prabhupada to make sure that they were on the right track, basically. And so Sarup Damodar, later Maharaj, you know, was saying, so first of all, we can distinguish between living and non-living things. And he says, you know, we all know what living entities are. They go through the six processes, and then you have dull matter like stone. And Prabhupada says, oh, sometimes stones are alive. He says, sometimes mountains are alive. And they kind of were very surprised. They sort of look, and the Prabhupada just said that same thing in his purport, is why that reminded me. And Prabhupada explained that mountains often grow, rocks and stones grow, crystals. I know crystals grow. They have all these different processes. And someone is saying, well, are they alive now? And Prabhupada said, no, mostly not. Now they're dead. In other words, they were alive once, they were growing, now they've stopped growing, the spirit soul is gone. And he gave a real simple, just such a simple example to explain this. He said, you go in a forest, you see a tree. The tree is alive. It dies, it falls down, you see a log. The log's now dead. The spirit soul is gone because it's just, you know, now a dead log that's rotting in the forest. So the same way, so many of these stones and mountains were alive, now they're not. So most of them are not alive now. If you go out there and pick up a few rocks, they more than likely are not living entities, you know. But anyway, it's very interesting to kind of like expand our understanding of what really goes on in the world. Okay, so text 29, among the living entities who have developed sense perception, those who develop a sense of taste are better than those who develop only the sense of touch. Better than them are the ones who have developed a sense of smell, and better still are those who have developed a sense of hearing. So we see that there's this progression of sensory development from different species of life, and it's cumulative. In other words, that one who has this sense also has the others, right? In other words, it's so finally you get to where they have all five senses, as we do in more advanced animals. The purport, Prabhupada said, the next manifestation is the development of sense perception. In the Moksha Dharma section of the Mahabharata, it is stated, trees have developed sense perception. They can see and smell. We know by experience that trees can see. Sometimes it's the growth of a large tree changes its course of development to avoid some hindrance. This means a tree can see, and according to Mahabharata, a tree can also smell. Indicates the development of sense perception. But then Prabhupada goes on to say, better than trees are fish because they also have a sense of taste, a tree doesn't. Better than the fish are bees because what sense do they have? Yeah, but also, no, well, the fish have taste. So in addition to that, bees have, think about going to flowers, smell. They have the sense of smell. In addition, so bees are kind of getting a little more advanced, you know. And beyond that, of course, then serpents. Snakes have developed a sense of hearing. And he talks about how a snake can hear a frog croaking and will, you know, go after that frog. You know, and actually, if you see this progression, it really kind of follows along our normal thinking about, right, the development of different consciousness of different animals. I mean, we often see that, you know, in other words, animals are more developed than plants. So even an insect has more developed senses than a plant generally. And then among insects, bees, and like that, obviously snakes, reptiles are more advanced, and as we go like that. And of course, then we get to fish. And finally, you know, of course, we get to birds, mammals like that, which are even more developed. So I thought this was interesting about plants seeing. There's actually some scientific work that kind of supports this about that plants and trees actually do have sort of a sense of sight. And I thought this was interesting, probably gives an example about how trees grow around an obstruction. You can say, well, maybe they just feel it, they run into it, they move around. But it is more than that. If you have any experience with growing and gardening, like I usually grow some pole beans, in the spring and summer. They climb, the beans that climb, up trellises and things. Just the way I have it, I didn't have it, set up in the best way. My row of beans is about a foot away from the trellis. So it's not like they're just naturally can go up it. But they go up and they shoot these runner up and somehow they turn and go over and find the trellis. Now, not every single one. A couple of them I have to train up there because they've gone the wrong way. But 90% of most of them do. And I was realizing this concept that they actually can see and they know which way to go so that they'll be supported. Okay. This is text 30 of chapter 29. Better than those living entities who can perceive sound are those who can distinguish one form from another. Better than them are those who developed upper and lower sets of teeth. And better still are those who have legs. Better than quadrupeds, better are quadrupeds, and better still are the human beings. And then three more verses go on. Once you get the human beings, there's three more verses that talk about the development of human beings up to the point of the pure devotee of the Lord. But we're not going to do that because we're talking about animals today and plants. So each new category of sensory awareness includes the others. Then the living entities have many legs, like wasps are better than plants with grass, which have no legs, Prabhupada's report. Four-legged animals are better than many-legged. So it sounds like the fewer legs you have, the more developed, right? It's like, insects have, usually they have six legs. Spiders and arachnids have eight legs, right? But mammals, usually have, four legs. And human beings have two legs. So also there's development of fewer legs. Interesting. You ever think of that? The things that you learn in these classes, We also hear the distinction sometimes between moving and non-moving living entities, right? We often hear about that, the moving and the non-moving living entities. So moving living entities who are able to ambulate, obviously, are more advanced than plants and things which have no ability to walk, unless they're in the spiritual world. That's a different thing. So before describing all these distinctions, it's interesting because a few verses earlier, Kapila tells Devahuti not to make any distinctions based on the body. In 329, 22, and 23, he says, one who worships the deity of Godhead in the temple but does not know the Supreme Lord as Paramatma is situated in every living entity's heart, must be in ignorance, and is compared to one who offers oblations into ashes. 23, one who offers me respect but is envious of the bodies of others and therefore a separatist never attains peace of mind because of his inimical behavior towards other living entities. Interesting word here, a separatist. In other words, one who doesn't see everything as part and parcel of God, but one who sees everything separately. This is different. This is the deity, and this is different than Krishna. This is different than me. It's really not an advanced perspective. Prabhupada says, a devotee's vision, therefore, must be perfect. He should ignore bodily distinctions and should see only the presence of the part and parcel of the Supreme Lord and the Lord himself in his plenary expansion as Supersoul. That's the vision of the pure devotee. So the spiritual vision of the pure devotee is based upon two points. One, that the Supersoul pervades everything and is in everyone's heart and within every living entity. So wherever you look, wherever you see any animal, plant, the super soul is there, and also the spirit soul itself, because the same spirit soul life force is within everybody. Now, there's variety, obviously, even amongst amongst the spirit souls. Each jiva has its own particular rasa, in particular form, in particular relationship with Krishna. But they're equal in the sense that they're all pure, right? They are all, completely, they're Satchitananda and completely dedicated as part and parcel of Krishna. So Prabhupada says, even living entities who are lower than humans can be raised to Krishna consciousness by other methods. So now we want to talk a little bit about how we can help other living entities. We know human beings, we have a whole program about how to try to bring human beings to Krishna consciousness through reading Prabhupada's books, hearing the holy name, taking prasadam, visiting the temple, seeing the deity, so many things, associating with devotees. We know this process. But Prabhupada says, for example, Shivananda Sen, a great devotee of Lord Chaitanya, delivered a dog by feeding him prasad. Distribution of prasad or remnants of foodstuffs offered to the Lord, even to the ignorant masses of people and to animals, gives such living entities the chance for elevation to Krishna consciousness. So that's one thing we can always do, is trying to give prasadam to living entities. So a separatist is one who sees distinction. But Bhagavad Gita 5.18 says, the humble sage, by virtue of true knowledge, sees with equal vision a learned and gentle Brahmin, a cow, an elephant, a dog, and a dog eater. So samadarshana means one who sees with equal vision. So Prabhupada says in a purport to 632, he is the best yogi because he does not desire perfection yoga for personal benefit, but tries for others also. He does not envy his fellow living entities. So he's thinking, how do we envy living entities? When you think about plants and animals, I don't normally think I feel particularly envious of them. I don't really want what they have. So how do human beings exhibit envy towards lower living entities? Any ideas? What does that mean when he says doesn't have envy towards his fellow living entities? Killing them and eating them, absolutely. That's the worst envy that human beings have. I mean, it is envy because it's not accepting them as being equal. It's something inferior. They're just for our benefit, So yeah, killing and violence, hunting, eating, meat eating shows great envy of other living entities. So sometimes, of course, these living entities exhibit some higher development. And sometimes we see animals maybe more evolved than the normal species. We see this first of all, like in the verse today, the examples of Bindu Sarovara. These birds are chanting Hare Krishna. They're obviously not ordinary birds. And we see so many different examples. In fact, we see many special animals often with devotees, right? Well, I mean, everybody has experienced, some animal around the temple, around your house or something that you can see is a little bit different, maybe a little bit special, seems to have some attraction that would not, that normal animals wouldn't. And, because obviously they may have had some exposure to Krishna consciousness in a past lifetime. They didn't make it to the human platform, but they're getting an opportunity this lifetime. I had a dog many years ago that, border collie, whenever we, if we had a kirtan or we were chanting, he would come and just lay down and just completely attentively listen to the kirtan. You can tell, he just was absorbed in it, never caused any trouble, never anything, Sometimes he would try to chant along a little bit, but his howling wasn't really a very good rendition of the mantra. But usually he was just very quiet. And we've all seen that. There was once, I think it was New Vrindavan, wasn't there, when there were these kittens, and Prabhupada saw them, and they were near Prabhupada, and he took his feet and was sort of petting them, rubbing them with his foot. Can you imagine the benefit of those kittens, having the dust of the lotus feet of Srila Prabhupada on them? Obviously, now this would not be an ordinary living entity. Somehow they qualified, for something special like that. Anyway, of course, in a spiritual world, we know that cows are very, very special, very dear to Krishna, but other animals, plants too. We see in Goloka, of course, all living entities are totally spiritual and conscious, not like in the material world. So we see in the pastimes of Vrindavan, the trees will bow down and offer flowers. The bees chant Vedic mantras. We've heard that a couple times. Rivers become stunned in ecstasy, and mountains melt hearing the flute. So, you know, you can see they're completely conscious. The deer, it says how in chapter 21, the Venu Gita talks about how all of the entities are affected by Krishna's flute when he plays, about the mountains, the rivers, the deer come to hear, the demigods, of course. The peacocks dance with Krishna. And sometimes the bird singing says, compliment his flute playing. There's some bird that says, plays along with a fifth note or something on the flute. I don't know what that means, but you know, we can assume that it's a highly conscious, evolved entity, you know, that's accompanying Krishna on his flute. So in so many ways, we can see that there are these special animals that transcend the normal bodily designation. And of course, within the material world, there's some nice stories in Chaitanya Charitamrita. One that I like is, of course, Shivananda Sen's dog. This is from, where is it? Anchalila chapter 1, I think. Verses something like 16 through 32, if I remember. I didn't write it down. Okay, I'm going to read this. We'll end with this little pastime. Shivananda Sen arranged for the journey, going to Jagannath Puri with all the devotees. He maintained everyone and provided residential quarters. While going to Jagannath Puri, Shivananda Sen allowed a dog to go with him. He supplied it food to eat and maintained it. One day, they needed to cross a river. An Arisan boatman would not allow the boat to get in the, not allow the dog to get in the boat. Shivananda Sen, unhappy the dog had to stay behind, paid the boatman 10 panav conch shells, that must be a lot, to take him across the river. One day, while Shivananda was detained by a tall man, his servant forgot to give the dog its cooked rice. At night, when Shivananda Sen returned and was taking his meal, he inquired from the servant whether the dog had gotten its meals. When he learned the dog had not been supplied food in his absence, he was very unhappy. He then immediately sent 10 men to find the dog. When the men returned without success, Shivananda Sen became very unhappy and fasted for the night. In the morning, they looked for the dog but could not be found. All the Vaishnavas were astonished. Thus, in great anxiety, they all walked to Jagannath Puri, where Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu met them as usual. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went with them to see the Lord in the temple, and on that day he also took lunch in the company of all the devotees. As previously, the Lord provided them all with residential quarters. And the next morning, all the devotees came to see the Lord. When all the devotees came to the place of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they saw the same dog sitting a little apart from the Lord. Furthermore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was throwing remnants of green coconut pulp to the dog. Smiling in his own way, he was saying to the dog, chant the holy names, Rama, Krishna, and Hari. Seeing the dog eating the green coconut pulp and chanting Krishna, Krishna, again and again, all the devotees present were very surprised. When he saw the dog sitting that way and chanting the name of Krishna, Shivananda, because of his natural humility, immediately offered his obeisances to the dog to counteract his offenses to it. The next day, no one saw that dog, but it obtained its spiritual body and departed for Vaikuntha, the spiritual kingdom. Okay, so I'll end at that point. I guess the story here is we don't want to become an animal or a plant. We'll try to avoid that birth, usually in the mode of ignorance. And at the same time, we try to help all the living entities, however possible, with us hearing the holy name, taking prasadam, etc. Okay. Questions, comments, thoughts? Yeah. Trivikram?
Firstly, I'd like to thank you very much for sticking on the topic and did a lot of research. It was very good. You did a great job.
Thank you.
So, good example for all the speakers to learn to, you know. Some speaker might have sidestep and talk about other things, but you focus on it. That's good. So with the species, 8 million species. So there are 2 million species of unmovables, the plants and creepers and so. Mm-hmm. There are 3 million animals. I think 1 million birds, 900,000 fishes, and 1,100,000 insects. Mm. That's the 8 million species. Mm-hmm. You know, and all of them, you know, I guess some scriptures give more details. It's also stated that each species enjoys has a special ability. And the 8 million are created to experience a certain sensual pleasure.
Right.
You know, like we know, like for example, the birds enjoy flight in different ways, fish swimming, monkeys jumping, like that, you know, beast tearing, and you know, Srila Prabhupada used often say, like, well, if you want to eat meat, then you get the body of a tiger or a lion, because they're developed for those things. See? So all these species. Interesting. And then the purport speaks about like pious plants and impious, pious animals, which is, yeah. Lord Krishna was telling Uddhava also, he says like, there's one impious plant, it lives on the bank of the Ganges, tastes the pure, nice water of the Ganges, but yet produces bitter fruit, you know? And then he says, similarly, there's some type of men, they hear the beautiful conversation of the Lord or whatever, but then they distort it, you know, and become like Mayavadis, and things like that, you know?
Okay.
Little comment.
Thank you. All right. Anyone else? Comments? No. Last chance. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.